This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. I'm Sharmila with me, Dashrin and Sue Ann, in case you'd forgotten. Before the break, we were talking about the 50th anniversary of Judy Blume's classic book, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, and how it was so controversial because it chose and tried to educate young women about their bodies, about sexuality, and about growing up. Mm. And now moving on to our second story, the big news out of the US this week has been the announcement of Kamala Harris as the Democratic Party's nominee for vice president for the US presidential race, alongside, of course, Joe Biden. So there have been a lot of celebrations for several reasons. You know, one, because it's a female candidate, but also because she's being hailed as the first black woman to be up for national office in the US, as well as the first person of Indian descent.
Yes, and the responses from the public media and social media have been very interesting, particularly when it comes to the question of race. Mm. On the one hand, there are all the Indian Americans and Indians elsewhere embracing her as their own. Suddenly, there are stories of a South Indian origins flying all over social media. And on the other hand, there are numerous people hailing the first black woman to be nominated. Meanwhile, there are already criticisms piling up from her detractors that she technically isn't African American, that she isn't black enough, that she isn't Indian enough, and so on.
Mm. Now, Harris is biracial. She was born in Oakland, California to immigrant parents. Her father migrated to the US from Jamaica and her mother from India. Harris herself identifies as both, and she has spoken in both her memoir as well as in interviews and speeches on how she considers herself both black as well as Indian. And let's also add that she is also a lawyer who served at the US Attorney General for 6 years before being elected a senator in 2017. And she's been a familiar face in American political landscape since and has both strong supporters and detractors. However, since her nomination, it's this question of race that seems to be popping up again and again.
Mm. And in many ways, this thorny issue of racial identity is something most people with mixed ethnicities face, and no less so here in Malaysia either. So this discussion about Kamala Harris is a good opportunity for us to look at issues that people here of mixed racial background face, especially in terms of identity. I mean, we have all been taught, of course, that Malaysia is made up of Chinese, Indians, Indigenous peoples, and others. But we still don't have an adequate way to address people who have mixed backgrounds. You know, currently, people are allowed to register under either their mother or father's race, but this does mean that you have to pick either one.
Mm. Mm. And now, it is difficult to estimate how many people of mixed race there are in Malaysia because they have all been registered as either one of their racial backgrounds. However, according to the Department of Statistics, in Malaysia, 9% of the total marriages in 2018 were so-called mixed marriages. Mm. This is about 18,500 marriages in 2018 alone. So it's not a small number of people.
And over the years, we've had many calls for better ways to register and identify people of mixed ethnicities. Famously, back in 2011, Segambut MP Hannah Yeo made headlines when she tried to register her daughter as Anak Malaysia instead of having to choose between Chinese or Indian based on her and her husband's ethnicities. Mm. This, however, was rejected by the National Registration Department. And subsequently, Yeo's two children are now registered as Chinese and Indian, respectively.
Mm. As one way of dealing with this particular issue, Singapore introduced double-barreled race registration in 2010, where citizens of mixed race are allowed to register as both races of their parents. So, for example, Chinese Indian. Meanwhile, in countries like the US or the UK, self-identification is used to register people under specific ethnic categories, and they are able to self-identify as more than one race as well. However, it should be pointed out that even making things clearer on paper does not necessarily remove the societal prejudice around the idea of race. So, for instance, when current Singaporean President Halimah Yacob was elected in 2017, she was celebrated as the first Malay Muslim woman to hold that post. But people were also very quick to raise questions about her mixed heritage. You know, Halimah is of Indian and Malay parentage, and there were questions and criticisms of her, you know, being quote-unquote not Malay enough and ironically not Indian enough as well.
I mean, we see this play out elsewhere too, don't we? Because, for instance, Barack Obama was hailed as the first black president of the US, but he is biracial as well. His mother was white. That doesn't make him any less black, but it is true that it keeps getting brought up as a contention especially in discussions of whether he's black enough.
Mm.
Right. And so to help us unpack the various aspects of coming from a mixed race background, we have on the line Kevin Bartman, who is the founder of the Chindian Diaries, a project that documents cross-cultural stories between the Chinese and Indian communities. Thanks for joining us, Kevin. So one of the things we see in the case of Kamala Harris is the need by many people to pick one identity. Is she Indian? Is she Jamaican? And so on. Do you see this being faced by people of mixed ethnicity here in Malaysia as well?
So I think first up, I probably just want to say that because I curate the Chindian Diaries page, that I'll probably speak on about my own experiences and my own insights that I've gathered over the years. Like, for instance, the Chindian community, it's not monolith. Yes, it's not one-dimensional, but we do share a lot of shared experiences. But from my perspective, I think many mixed-race people, biracial or multiracial individuals, do face this burden of representation almost. You know, it's almost they're expected to represent all our cultural groups. Yeah, so... And so in the case of for Chindians, you know, it's almost expected that, you know, you would be representing the Chinese and the Indian side, obviously, right? And I think really because of this, sometimes I feel that a lot of mixed race people do have this, face this difficulty of actually facing an identity crisis of sorts, yeah? And there are those who, people who do accept, like, you know, our state's classification, racial classification, but I think more often than not, a lot of people today, I think, are also rejecting that, you know, saying that, you know, we want to self-identify how we feel comfortable. So I think, yeah, so I do feel that, you know, in many ways, mixed race, biracial people, they do have this added burden of almost representing their culture more so than I in some ways a monoracial sort of person, yeah. And also bearing in mind as well that, you know, there are people who do believe in the fact that, you know, that we should always follow the father's race, right? You know, we've often hear of that often, but many forget that, you know, this is really because of a patriarchal society that we live in, you know. And often we don't acknowledge, you know, the mother side of things. You know, I think people do need to be aware about this, of how society has actually been built, you know, and how patriarchal lineages have been perpetuated for a long, long time.
So, Kevin, alongside this burden that you mentioned of being expected to represent both sides, is there also a challenge in terms of feeling, or rather not feeling, a sense of belonging?
In many ways, because of that burden, I mean, sometimes a lot of mixed race people also feel like they don't feel like they belong in either side, right? And I think this kind of reminds me of the story I wrote about Fran, our Malaysian singer. Yeah, and I remember this quote that she had once, where she said that, you know, she's not light enough to be Chinese and not dark enough to be Indian, you know. And I think that kind of really kind of encapsulates how a lot of, for instance, the Chindian community people, you know, feel about their own self-identity, you know, because you're kind of not really accepted on either side sometimes, you know. Or sometimes being made to pick a side, you know, based on how you look or based on what religion you are, based on, you know, what culture stronger in the family even. And often I think we almost have this sense that, you know, or, you know, that we are being forced to do that, you know, instead of actually letting us kind of feel that we can actually belong to both. And I think, and I remember, you know, reading up about the fact that, you know, because obviously on our Malaysian classification, you know, we're only allowed to tick one box, yeah? And that's really problematic in that sense. I mean, putting aside the fact that we actually do even need to have a racial tick boxes, but in the Malaysian context, you know, you're only allowed to pick one racial box. For instance, in Singapore, for instance, since 2010, they have actually allowed parents to actually tick two racial categories, meaning you can actually record your child's race as double barrel. And and also recently I read in the Pew Research in just this year, 2020, in the US, Official forms actually ask respondents, for instance, who choose white or black for their race, right? That they can actually give more information about their origins. So, for instance, you know, you could be German, you could be Lebanese, you could be Somali, for instance. Whereas in our country, you know, in Malaysia, we not only are we allowed to just pick one racial box, we are not even allowed to even expand on that. You know, as we know, you know, there are many sort of even diversities within the Indian culture, within the Chinese culture as well. You know, so but it all gets flattened down to sort of one race, almost like one monoracial race. You know, so yeah, so. I think it's something that we haven't quite worked out in this country. And I think there's a lot more that needs to be done, I think, you know.
Mm. So to just unpack that a little, when a person of mixed ethnicity is only allowed to register as one race in Malaysia, what does that do to their sense of identity?
Yeah, so when someone is forced to tick just one racial box, you know, they often... have this sense that, you know, when they do that, they are forgetting one side of their parents' cultural heritage, for instance, yeah? And often, I think that leads to a lot of issues around, identity, you know, as they're growing up. Today, there's a bit more of an awareness that there are, you know, mixed race people in Malaysia, and people are getting more used to that, right? But there is still this notion where you, on official forms, on certain things that, you know, you're really only allowed to pick one box. So, I think for a young child growing up, I think that is going to be quite, confusing time for them, as I think most mixed race people who grew up in Malaysia would feel that as well. That leads to issues around self-confidence, self-esteem issues, you know, as you're growing up as well, not feeling like you're really quite belonging to either groups, you know, and I think even for me, as when I was growing up as well, when they were sort of segregating, the school children to a racial group, you know, okay, so you're Malay and you're Chinese and you're Indian and you go to different subgroups, you know, and often, you know, you don't really know where you go, you know, even though, you know, on my birth certificate it's Indian because I follow my father, but you know, there's this side of you with that feels that, you know, you're also forgetting the other side, you know. So I think for a young person, I think it is a lot to sort of deal with in many ways. As an adult, I think you become more aware about this, issues around race, yeah, as you learn more about the world. But for someone who's quite young, I think they would generally feel that they would have to do more to assert their individuality, I suppose, or even their race, you know, to show that they do in fact belong to one group, for instance, you know, or more so to one group than the other.
And from your own experiences and, you know, your experience putting together the Chindian Diaries, what are some of the struggles a person of mixed heritage faces here in Malaysia in terms of how they are treated by society?
So some of the challenges obviously include the fact that not only knowing that people, some people might not even know how to place you, you know, because you might kind of have a sort of a Chinese name, but you might be a lot more tan, you know. So they do have this confusion when they look at someone like that, you know. And often, I think all these experiences as you're growing up, you know, you have these experiences. I mean, it does build a sense of resilience in that person in many ways because of a lot of the, I guess in some ways, ignorance, you know, that has been, that you've been sort of like fed, you know, and you just have to sort of deal with it in many ways. But I think in some ways, I think some people do come out stronger, as they get older because of the fact that, and also learn to sort of appreciate both sides and both ethnicities, both cultural, you know, backgrounds that they have. Or even more than two, you know. For me, I think the main issue is really for younger people, you know, when as they are sort of trying to deal with their own identity issues or, you know, their sense of belonging. In terms of the of other challenges that, that we face, beyond the sense of identity, there is also an aspect of how you know, religion also plays a role. You know, so a person of a Chindian background, for instance, might have two different religions in the household. Yeah, so that also kind of create maybe not so much confusion, but an awareness that, you know, that you could have many intersections in your life. You know, you could have a couple of rather differences of religion as well. You know, some people might also follow the Hindu customs, but also the Buddhist customs as well. And I think that's one of the more interesting parts, because it does teach you a lot about, you know, awareness, tolerance, you know, difference of religions in family as well. You know, even though there are challenges, but I think there are also really quite beautiful things about, you know, being part of a sort of a mixed race family or mixed race community.
So you mentioned earlier that Singapore has the option of people registering double-barreled races. Do you think that this is something Malaysia should consider?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think allowing the parents to actually pick two racial categories is the first step, I would say. I wouldn't say that it's the last step. But in many ways, I think in some of the other sort of Western countries, the trend now is to actually allow people to self-identify. Mm. And so what I mean is that, you know, with that peer research that I just said to you, I think a lot of countries are allowing people to actually describe how they feel they want to be identified as, you know. Because you could also argue that, you know, why do they only allow you to pick two racial boxes, right? Mm-hmm. So you could have mixed race parents on both sides, and therefore, which side do you pick? You know, do you pick the two strongest one in both sides, or do you accept that there might be four or five different ethnicities, or different cultural backgrounds that they share, but you're only allowed to pick two? You know, so. Mm-hmm. But as I said, I mean, this is really the first step in when it comes to racial tick boxes in Singapore. But, you know, I think Malaysia does need to sort of let go of this really outdated and mode of identification, you know, of how we just really pick one box, you know, without allowing people to even elaborate on, you know. And there's also complications as well when you do tick the other box, right, in that line, right? In many various ways of how when you do tick that, you know, you sometimes find that people, when you go to sort of government bodies and stuff like that, you know, and if your parents are, you know, Indian or Chinese or whatever, you get, you know, questions like, oh, well, you should have followed your father's race, you know, whereas the individual might have picked, you know, others. So in many ways, you're being determined, you know, by other people within that sort of governmental office, you know. So to me, I mean, I think we should allow people to self-identify versus having the state to impose on you, you know, whether it's just one racial category or two racial categories.
Mm. And what do you think about the push by some people that we should all simply be registered as Malaysian?
I mean, I agree with that to a certain extent, that, you know, we should all identify as Malaysians. But my concern with that is also that we do forget the nuances of our own identity, you know, because a large part of our own being, of our own identity, comes from our own cultural background, you know, the cultures that we grew up in. So I'm a bit divided in that, you know, because I mean I do see that there is there are strengths about, you know, uniting people under the banner of being Malaysian, but at the same time I think culture is also very important to a lot of people as well, you know. So, and allowing them on how they want to identify as is sort of a logical step. I think the next logical step for people to do, really, you know, to allow people to do that, you know, without actually flattening or ignoring other aspects of their life or other aspects of their identity.
Thank you, Kevin. That was Kevin Buthman, founder of the Chindian Diaries. So, I mean, he raised a lot of great points there, but I think primarily is this, I think the most important thing is to let people honor their identities, you know, because even looking at this whole Kamala Harris thing, it strikes me that everyone chooses to impose an identity onto her without actually paying attention to what she might identify herself as.
Yeah, what she identifies as, what are the struggles that she has grown up with and all that. I think those are important as well.
Yeah, and in this case, she herself has been very vocal about how she identifies herself. So I can imagine, like, if someone isn't vocal, you know, how this might influence how you feel about your identity.
Mm. So we do have to wrap up, unfortunately. We're running out of time, but you can continue to share your thoughts with us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Facebook, we are BFM, the Bigger Picture. And if you've missed any part of today's show, the podcasts are up on bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app or on Spotify. Suen and I will be scooting off now, but coming up at 3 p.m, Dashran will be staying and speaking to James Dorsey, who is the senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies and the Middle East Institute. And they will be talking about the recent Beirut explosion and contextualizing it within Lebanon's larger socio-political landscape. So that's it from us on the Daily Digest. Have a great weekend, everyone. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.